On this 20th day of July 2006, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 1, Observing the Armies on the Battlefield of Kurukshetra, text number 41. 141. Probably page 61. Sankaro Narakayaiva Kulugnanam Kulasyacha Patanti Pitaro Yesham Lupta Pindo Dagakriya. Translation: an increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors of such corrupt families fall down because the performances for offering them food and water are entirely stopped. Purport: according to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, there is a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful reactions. Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various types of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in subtle bodies as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to the forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in the devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. It is stated in the Bhagavatam 11.5.41, Deva shibhutaptan vinam patrinam makinkaronayam hrini charajan Sarvatmana yaksharanam sharanyam gato mukundam pariruttikartam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation, and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Close quote. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnanatamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. So Arjuna is continuing with his argument that he shouldn't fight. In the previous verse, he described how when irreligion becomes prominent, the women become polluted. Now, that can also happen when the men are killed. That's another big problem here. He's going to be engaging in this battle, and there are literally thousands and hundreds of thousands, millions on the other side, and they're all going to be killed. So what will happen to their wives? They'll all be widows, and they'll be subject to being misguided and becoming polluted. And then when women become degraded, this Varna Sankara comes up. Varna Sankara literally means the mixing, unwanted mixing of castes. So, but in Srila Prabhupada's dictionary, it also indicates unwanted progeny, which is what issues from this unwanted mixing of castes. And so that creates a hellish situation in society. And here, Arjuna is expressing the fear or apprehension that it will be create a hellish life not only for those who are in that situation but also for those who cause it, namely himself. So he doesn't want to perform sin. He's much more afraid of performing sin than of dying. For a Kshatriya, death is not an issue because, as Krishna will describe later in his effort to convince Arjuna to fight, either you win the battle and you enjoy the earthly kingdom, or you get killed and you enjoy heaven because it's a righteous fight. So it's a win-win situation for the Kshatriya, if he fights. But if he doesn't fight and goes away, then, as Krishna will say in the second chapter, then that itself is a sin, just walking away from a righteous fight. But Arjuna's argument here is that it's not a righteous fight, that this will result in a stoppage of pinda. Pinda is this offering to the forefathers, or shraddha, to offer food or prasadam to the forefathers who have passed away, who might be suffering sinful reactions. So these things can go on a subtle level. We can see here, well, how can you offer them? They're already dead. Yes, but they're in a subtle form. They're still existing. Everyone is still existing. There's no such thing as death. So it's understood that if the descendants offer honor, sometimes we'll find in this temple, actually, some of our Indian friends, they want to have this Shraddha ceremony performed, and Chaitanya Bhagwan Prabhu or Dharmasetu Prabhu will perform a little ceremony here, usually in the middle of the day. We're not so aware of it, where you'll have a picture of the departed, and they'll offer prasadam, you know, that's already been offered to Vishnu, to the departed, and in this way we understand that they're benefited. Their path out of any sinful reactions or sinful life is made easier that way. But as Prabhupada makes the point here, devotion, one who is a sincere devotee, he takes care of all that. And we should, this is important for us, because sometimes if we take fully to Krishna consciousness, we feel, what about my relations? What about my blood relations? How about my mother and father? And am I really meeting my family obligations? So, as explained in the Shastra, and as Prabhupada quotes, Devarshi Bhutatman Rinam Patrinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rini Charajan, that this word Rini means debtor. So this is really what we're talking about here, that we have debts or obligations to our relatives. We're kind of born into a certain web or group of relationships, and they impose certain obligations on us. Certainly, like you have a child, well, you have an obligation. If you don't want to be a complete demon, you have to take care of the child, raise him up, and teach him and ethics and see that he gets a good education, and so forth. So that's an obligation. But similarly, we have other obligations just coming into this world. The devas. The devas are the gods, you know, Indra, Chandra, Surya, Vayu, Varuna, and so forth. And each one of them gives us gifts that in this completely blind modern culture, no one recognizes. But the sun is shining. Without the sun, we're finished, you know. And not only without the sun, we're finished, but too much sun is no good, and not enough sun is no good. The regulation of the rain and the heat and the cold and everything, keeping it just right, that's also done by higher powers. We're not doing it. We can mess it up, you know. We're doing a pretty good job of messing it up. Which is really what's happening is it's all controlled by higher powers. Because of the sinful activities of this world, therefore there's irregularities in the weather and the climate and all these different things and supplies. So we have an obligation to the devas. This is mentioned in the third chapter, that if you enjoy all these things, the water and the air and the sunshine and all of these things, but don't make an offering back to the gods, then you're thieves. You're thieves. And thieves are always punished, either in the civil society or in the universal society. Then there's the rishis. Rishi means sages. You know, on a material level, how much are we indebted to those who teach us how to read? You know, how to do everything. Growing up, we have a debt to pay for them. What to speak of the actual rishis and sadhus who teach transcendental knowledge. You know, we have a first thing you learn about practically as you begin to practice Krishna consciousness, there's a great line, there's a disciplic succession. You know, this science is not something that was made up recently. It's a great tradition that's come down from thousands of years. Well, what does that mean, come down? It means it was carefully passed down to practitioners and knowers of this science who have then passed it on. So what a great debt that we have to them. This is a treasure that we're enjoying. And then the bhutas, that's creatures in general, you know. I mean, the animals and the birds and all of these, bees. You know, people don't realize how much we depend on bees, you know, to pollinate all of these, like the almond trees or the fruit trees. They depend on bees.
And now it was a big crisis because bees are being killed by some disease or something recently. And then, you know, if all the bees are gone, we're in trouble. The food isn't going to happen. They cannot go and pollinate those trees one by one. We depend on the bees for our food. And, you know, these are the buddhas. And the aptas, relationships, the rinan, the people in general. So these are all, you know, we recognize, if we're intelligent, our dependence on this great web of humanity and living entities in general. But here it says, sarvatmananyak sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam padirichikartam, that one who surrenders completely to Mukunda, or Krishna, who is the true object of surrender, then all the debts are relieved. We don't have to worship the demigods. We don't have to offer pinda to the ancestors. We don't have to worry about all these other obligations if we meet this one obligation to serve Krishna. And the reason is because he's the root of everything. If you water the root of the tree, all of the branches and the flowers and the fruits and everything are nourished. And that's why it says, yatataro mula nishicharena chipyanti yatskanda bujo pashaka prano pahara chayatindrihanam tatayva sarvarhanam achyuteja. So this arhanam means worship. Just as you worship the root of the tree and all the branches and leaves and fruits are nourished, just as you offer food to the stomach and all the limbs are nourished, similarly, when you when you worship Krishna, all the devas and everyone else become satisfied. So this is the wonderment of devotional service. But Arjuna is not in devotional service now. And so he's wondering about all these different obligations and how they'll be damaged by his fighting the war. So he's starting with the wrong paradigm, kind of, you know, that he's not serving Krishna. And so then, this is a good lesson. Then all these other problems come up. As soon as you cut off your relation to Krishna, and that's not your prime focus, then a million different problems arise, which you can never solve materially. As you try to solve one, others come up. The very solution becomes the source of a future problem. The example I was giving of global warming, I didn't mention it, but that's obvious, you know, climate change, all of these things. So what's the reason for that? Well, we fail to realize sometimes, you know, where's all this electricity coming from? You know, there's these huge plants, they're burning natural gas, and in the Midwest they're burning coal, you know. Now we have to have the electricity to run this modern society, right? Because without one of the big things is electrification. That's a big sign of modernization. You know, in Russia, when the electricity went out, you know, there was a huge thing in the early 20th century. Or in America in the 19th century and 20th century, when electrification comes, you get the wires going. Well, who can deny that? It's important. You know, people can live a modern life. They can have light in the evening. And they can do all the million different things we do with electricity. But the other side of that is that you have the big coal plants. And then what happens when China and India want to also have electrification? Okay, more coal plants, more oil burning. And suddenly, do you know that we are getting the result of pollution that's happening in China? There's so much coal dust and regular dust blowing because there's desertification. It's blowing all across the Pacific Ocean and landing in the high areas in California. We are not immune. We're not protected by this ocean. It is a world problem. So we have a problem. We need to have power all over the place. We build all these plants, and then it creates another problem. And that problem can even be bigger than the problem of not having any electricity, ultimately. This is explained. So this is what happens when we try to solve our material problems with material solutions. We get more and more entangled in the banyan tree of this material world. So any questions or comments on this verse or purport? Okay, then we can move on to text 42. Arjun continues, Doshar eta kula gnanam varna sankara karakai utsadyante jati dharma kula dharmas chashasvata. By the evil deeds of those who destroy the family tradition and thus give rise to unwanted children, all kinds of community projects and family welfare activities are devastated. Community projects for the four orders of human society combined with family welfare activities, as they are set forth by the institution of Sanatana Dharma or Varnashram Dharma, are designed to enable the human being to attain his ultimate salvation. Therefore, the breaking of the Sanatana Dharma tradition by irresponsible leaders of society brings about chaos in that society, and consequently, people forget the aim of life, Vishnu. Such leaders are called blind, and persons who follow such leaders are sure to be led into chaos. Yeah. So, you see, he's assuming that when the war will be fought and the husbands will be killed, then all of this Varnasankha will take place. What he's forgetting is that Yudhishthira will be ruling, and that Yudhishthira will be empowered by Krishna to overcome whatever difficulties there are because of the death of these husbands. In other words, with a powerful enough king or leader, then who is empowered by the Lord, then all kinds of difficulties can be overcome. And if you look at things materially, you know, you have a certain calculation. Then you follow a certain path of action based on your conclusions from your material experience. But the spiritual things work on a different paradigm, if you will. For instance, Prabhupada's enterprise to start this movement was materially completely impossible. And there were those who were trying to discourage him. This, you know, Sumati Maharaji, who was a key figure, you know, giving him free passage when he had no money, and, you know, she first tried to discourage him, you know, on a very reasonable basis. You're old, you know, Bhaktivedanta Swami, your health is not so good, you don't have any funds, you don't have any friends there. How are you going to succeed? You just go and die. You know, that's what she was saying. But Prabhupada had faith in the Lord. It was completely, you know, irrational. It wasn't based on anything material. And by the super mundane, you know, force that's really just Krishna, he succeeded beyond any, you know, calculations. Even Prabhupada was surprised at how much he succeeded. And, you know, at first, I mean, but he saw this is the hand of Krishna, you know. And the amazing thing was, is that at that kind of calculation, he also, you know, instilled in his devotees. I mean, if you ever hear, you know, Chuddhi Prabhu, I don't know if you know Chuddhi, those who've been like to Laguna Beach, he's there, you know, he lives there, he has two children or something. But he was a pioneer in South Africa. And his story is absolutely amazing. He was like 19, I think. Maybe he turned 20 when he was down there. Just a kid. You know, he joined when he was 17, like that. And then he ended up going with another devotee to South Africa to start out the South African Yatra. To go and rent a house somewhere and go on the street, start chanting Hare Krishna, try to find some Indians, get a little support, you know. And then they had some books. You know, just somehow make some inroads, you know. So after a couple of months of that, you know, they were making some friends, you know, but they weren't doing, you know, it wasn't like thousands of people were coming. And his senior, you know, who he went with, he was just a servant of this other fellow who was, I think, a sannyasi at the time. He left. He left a note on the door, goodbye, I'm leaving, you know, I can't handle it or something, went back to New York. So there he is, all alone, 19-year-old kid, you know, height of apartheid, you know. And of course, he was preaching pure Krishna consciousness. Anyone can come. Black, white, you know, anyone who knows the history, it was really heavy in South Africa, really heavy. So, you know, he got arrested, you know, they tried to shut him down. You know the history, right?
They tried to push him out the window. They threatened to push him out the window.
Really?
Then he said, if you look down below, you'll see my mother and father, they're lawyers, and they'll inform the American embassy and
say, yeah, mother knows, probably knows the story better than me. But, you know, here, you know, just the whole thing is inconceivable. And somehow, you know, he borrowed more books in order to, you know, because he had to have some funds, so he got a whole shipment of books that he couldn't pay for, You know, so he started selling them, you know, that, you know, he couldn't pay for them right away. But, so, and then he wrote a letter to Prabhupada, you know, telling him his situation, what should I do? And he said he got the letter back real fast. You know, Prabhupada saw how important it was. He wrote him back instantly as soon as he got the letter. You know, real fast means within a half hour you get your email back. But then, you know, like a week, that was it, you know. So, you know, and he was just one of many. There was like Shivaram, who was the first devotee to go to Europe, started the temple in Hamburg all alone, you know. So how could that be? You know, here's people like ordinary guys off the streets, some former hippies or something, and suddenly they're doing these incredible things. Just on the faith and Prabhupada's example and his, you know, surety that Krishna will protect you and Krishna will empower you and, you know, become successful like that. And this is how this movement grew all over the world. So there's no material calculation. Arjuna is engaging in material calculation now. His calculation is perfectly reasonable from that point of view. If I fight, I'm going to kill. First of all, it's going to be very traumatic for me. I'm going to be killing my relatives and so forth. But aside from that, the result will be, disaster in society. So what's the point? You know, I don't want to enjoy this kingdom at the cost of Varnasankara overrunning society and all these different things. So his arguments were very reasonable, but they left out the critical factor of Krishna's all-seeing and all-empowering hand that would guide it, because it is Krishna's mission, and therefore he will make it successful, even if materially it looks impossible. This is a very good lesson for us. Okay, any comments or questions on that point? All right, moving along. Text 43. Utsanna kala dharmanam utsanna kula dharmanam manushyanam janardana nadake niyatam vaso bhavati anu sushuma. O Krishna, maintainer of the people, I have heard by disciplic succession that those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. Purport: Arjuna bases his argument not on his own personal experience, but on what he has heard from the authorities. That is the way of receiving real knowledge. One cannot reach the real point of factual knowledge without being helped by the right person who is already established in that knowledge. There is a system in the Varnashram institution by which, before death, one has to undergo the process of atonement for his sinful activities. One who is always engaged in sinful activities must utilize the process of atonement, called prayaschitta. Without doing so, one surely will be transferred to hellish planets to undergo miserable lives as the result of sinful activities. Okay, so Prabhupada is talking about the need for prayaschitta. But of course we know, and this is another very important point here, is that Arjuna is heard by disciplic succession. But the disciplic succession that he's heard from is not the totally transcendental disciplic succession. There are also disciplic successions of totally materialistic knowledge. Now, what he is quoting here may be something from the Manu Samhita, or maybe something from some section of the Vedas, which speaks of this, injunction that, oh, if one's family traditions are destroyed, and therefore one cannot offer pinda and shraddha, and everything becomes, you lose all of the, samskaras and things like that, then your life becomes hellish, both in this world and the next. Because these things are like defenses against the impingement of the modes of nature and degradation. The tendency of the soul is to become degraded in contact with matter. Without protection from teaching and training from higher authorities who are carrying forward these purificatory processes, one is sure to become degraded. It says, Loke vivaya mishamadya seva. It was one verse Prabhupada would quote all the time. I think it's from the 11th canto. Loke vivaya mishamadya seva. That people in this world naturally tend toward intoxication, meat eating, and illicit sex. And without a training or some countervailing force, then that's what they'll do. Just like you see in the modern society, you know, things have gotten so much worse just in my lifetime, 58 years. You know, I mean, when I was growing up, the kinds of things that you see just on billboards or TV would be unthinkable. You know, just open sexuality and all of these things. propagation of gambling. Lotto, right? The lottery. Everywhere, every corner store has lottery tickets, lottery tickets. So that's gambling. In my day, it was you know, gambling wasn't allowed. We had the racetrack. You know, if you wanted to gamble, you go to the racetrack. And that was only in a few states. New York, California, Kansas City, there's no, you know, Kansas, there's no racetrack. You know. And some states were actually dry. You couldn't even drink. And then, or at least on Sunday, I think they had Blue Sundays or something, right? So it was all of this, you know. And then at a certain point, it was this big thing. There was a vote, and they had off-track betting. Oh, okay. You don't have to schlep down to the racetrack. You can just go down to some office or store, you know, in your town, and there's an off-track betting parlor. So you'd walk by it. I never went into one of those, and you'd see all these miserable guys, you know, standing around smoking cigarettes and figuring out the totes, you know, and the horses. So, but it was understood, okay, we got to keep it under restriction. You know, Prabhupada says, why is there a tax on liquor? Because they want to restrict it. It's bad, you know. Why is there restricted gambling? Because it's bad. Now, everywhere. You know, they just had a vote, oh, you can't gamble on the internet. You know, there's like an epidemic of gambling in colleges. Young guys and some girls getting on the computer and spending hours and hours and days practically trying to gamble with poker on online. Never had that when I was a kid. So why is that? Oh, this is the land of the free. You know, you can do whatever you want. You know, practically speaking. And so, but that means that they don't know what real dharma is. This is the example of Varnasankara. This society is what Arjun was afraid of, what we see now. No rules, no regulations, no tradition, no training, whatever the senses want to do, you know. Yeah, just pay your money and do it, you know. So it's disastrous for the human soul to be in an environment like this. So what he's saying, I've heard by disciplic succession that those whose family traditions are destroyed dwell always in hell. So this is what we've got here. But even if one's family traditions have been destroyed, if one comes to devotional service, one can be completely purified. The most powerful countervailing force to all this is the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the only thing that works in this age. You take a bunch of Kali Yugites who have no traditions, you know, they may be from broken family, even if they have a little, you know, nuclear family, they don't know anything, you know. We have nothing, basically, except, you know, hellish existence in this life and the next, that's our due. But we come in touch with the Bhagavad Gita, the holy name, and the devotees of the Lord, and we can turn the whole thing around. And we can turn the whole thing around and do the best thing for our family in this world and for previous generations. Because there's a tie there. There's a subtle tie between all our ancestors. There's, you know, the blood tie, all these things is there. Even though the souls inhabit different bodies and go in different families, still there's a relationship. And if someone becomes a devotee, and what to speak of a pure devotee, we can deliver whole generations going back. It's actually a great act of charity. So the one thing I wanted to emphasize, this one point, is that sometimes even in the Bhagavad Gita we'll find Krishna will give a instruction and then supersede it later. And there seems to be a contradiction. For instance, the sixth chapter. In sixth chapter, Krishna talks about the process of yoga, of, you know, meditative yoga. Right? And he talks about, okay, here's what you do. You have to go out to the forest and find a certain seat. You know, you sit on a deer skin and straw, and then you're completely free of sex life and alone and in a sacred place. And then you practice pranayama and you look between the eyebrows and you meditate in the heart and all this. So this is his recommendation. But then he completely supersedes that. You know? I mean, how can that be a recommendation for Arjuna? He went Arjuna to fight. So obviously, that's not what he wants Arjuna to do, you see. So then later on, at the end of the chapter, he says, okay, don't worry. Yogi namabhisarvesham magatinantaratmana. That those who are always thinking of me within their heart with great and transcendental faith, they are the greatest yogis. If you can do that without having to go out to the forest, then forget about the forest. Forget about all of this sitting alone and all this stuff. And that's exactly, you know, pertinent to us. We're not going out to the forest. But we have to become yogis. Becoming yogis is essential. But that just means fixing the mind on Krishna. If we can fix the mind on Krishna with a form of dynamic yoga called bhakti yoga, then who cares about the forest? You know. So all of that instruction is then superseded. And finally, after all of the Bhagavad Gita, he supersedes the whole thing with one verse. Sarva dharma paritya mame kamsanamaja. Bas. Give up all these other dharmas. And the word bas means that's all. Finished. You learn that word after a while. Bas. So give up everything. Give up all and just surrender unto me. I will protect you from all sins, which is what Arjun's worried about. I will protect. He's also worried about his own sins. And do it. So how to surrender me? Previous verse, think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage. That's it. Just follow that, those two verses. You don't have to worry about everything else. But it's good to know the Bhagavad Gita because, you know, the reason he spoke all these is because people are into karma yoga, they're into jnana yoga, they're into dhyana yoga. He's drinking all the different yogis. First he says, become a yogi. Then he says, okay, how do you practice yoga? Okay, you work in the world and give the fruit to me. In this way, you're eliminating sin. You're eliminating your attachments by giving me the fruit. But better than that is to think of me while you're working, you know, and cultivate knowledge. And better than that is to be completely absorbed in me at all times, you know. And the easiest way to do that is to learn to love me. That's basically the whole Bhagavad Gita. You have karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and bhakti yoga. And all the benefits of karma, jnana, and dhyana yoga are included in bhakti yoga. So here, the scene is being set by Arjuna, representing us, trying to make a material solution to his material problems. But there will be no solution in this way. He will find that he's caught in a dilemma that he cannot solve on his own. And he surrenders to the right source of knowledge. Any questions on these points? Yes?
Comment. To go along, besides the degradation of society and along with the unwanted progeny, you know, these women, I heard on the radio today, she's calling a health person, yeah, I had one abortion, now I have one child which I can take care of, but now I'm pregnant again, I think I'll give it up for abortion. Or not abortion, adoption.
Adoption. Yeah.
You know, what's that?
No, that's exactly what Arjun's describing. You know, you have unprotected womanhood, and you know they get pregnant. Okay, I have abortion. Then you get totally implicated in sin. You know, it's a horrible thing. And then you know, what do you do with that? You know, that's what happens to the kid who gets adopted? And, you know, will they get adopted? Orphanage.
One father that didn't want to pay child support, and he threw the child over.
Oh,
he's right now going through the courts.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is for child support.
Yeah. This is the society we live in. You know, when you have a society, so-called society, civilization, based on instant gratification, this is what you end up having. This is what you end up having. You know, you can almost see the level of civilization and knowledge in a society as to how broad your perspective is. You know, the one principle, and we'll end with this, is the principle of Shreyas and Prayas. You know, you have these little phrases that kind of encapsulate a lot of instruction. Shreyas and Prayas. Prayas is immediate gratification. Shreyas is ultimate good. The ultimate good. The Plato and Greeks, they were always looking for that. What is the good? You know, Socrates, right? You have so many conversations. What is the good? You know, what is the good? Well, this answers the good. You know, what's the purpose of life? You know, how many hours did we spend in the dorms, you know, in college, you know, what is the purpose of life? Why is there anything, you know? Let's check it out. It's, you know, and you look in philosophers, you know, Schopenhauer and Kant and all these things. You know, you bend your brain about all this stuff. And the answer is here. You know, people don't want to come to the end of the answer. They want to, you know, engage in the search forever, you know. There is a search forever. You know, you can have. The search is the search for Krishna. You never actually find him. You know, this idea of ever-increasing understanding and revelation. That's one thing. But the search for the purpose of life, or why is there anything, you know, or what is the ultimate good, that's given to us. the answers are given. So the ultimate good is really cannot be defined in material terms. It's beyond the material realm. You see? And to understand that good and to experience it, you have to turn your life upside down. You have to really go 180 degrees and realize that, oh, you know, my whole basis of calculation of what is good and true has been wrong because I don't know. You know, I'm basing it on my mind. My mind is imperfect. My senses are imperfect. I need to find that higher source of knowledge. So, Shreyas and Prayas. Arjuna is thinking now in terms of Prayas. Even though he's thinking of the society, he doesn't have that key transcendental element in his calculation, that Krishna is there and that you know the eternal religion. He's thinking in terms of, you know, what is the immediate good for society. The immediate good is that my friends will be alive and they won't be killed, and you know there'll be husbands to their wives, you know, and therefore there won't be Varnashankara. But the ultimate good is the, you know, the reestablishment relationship with Krishna, following his instructions and following his plan, even though it may seem impossible or illogical at times, you know, and that's what this seems to Arjuna. So that, you know, understanding what is Shreya. Remember again, we'll go back to our famous verse, which Arjuna will speak in a few verses hence. After saying, I do not know what real Dharma is, I am overwhelmed with this miserly weakness, now please tell me, O Krishna, what is the path to ultimate Shreya, to ultimate good. Yakshreyaksyan, nishtitam bruhitam. Nishtitam means certainly. I am your shishya, disciple, surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So this attitude, when we direct it toward Krishna, or Bhagavad Gita, this is the way to receive the Gita. I don't know what's the best for me. Please tell me, instruct me, and let me contemplate that and act on it. Any final comments or questions? Thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.